Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus are both floodwater mosquitoes, meaning that they lay their eggs inside containers, generally, at the surface of the water, and they wait for the water to rise up, and they get emerged, and this stimulates them to hatch. You can see a big morphological difference between the two species. Aegypti has this leer shape on its thorax, whereas albopictus has this tiger stripe, which is where it gets its common name from. Since 1985, when albopictus was discovered in Houston, Texas, it's distributed itself throughout the southern United States and the eastern United States and has appeared to displace Aedes aegypti. So now we're left with a situation where we have many locations where Aedes albopictus is the predominant species or the only species present. And then we have a few places where they exist sympatrically, and then even fewer places where Aedes aegypti is the dominant species. And it's this question of why is one species, the dominant species, or present, and why is the other one not present, which is kind of driving the research project that I'm going to talk about today. And the reason it's relevant, whether which species is present, is because their vector potentials are different. Aedes aegypti is a primary vector of dengue and yellow fever and a multitude of other diseases, meaning that it can cause an epidemic all by itself, whereas Aedes albopictus is a secondary vector of dengue and West Nile, and again, many other pathogens. So it doesn't commonly cause or perpetuate a disease outbreak all by itself. However, in the event that they're both present in an area, albopictus can amplify or worsen the disease outbreak. The egg stage is an important stage in floodwater mosquitoes because it's the stage in which they wait out unfavorable climatic conditions. And due to the very large surface area to small volume ratio, they're at high risk of desiccation. There has been several studies, I've actually done one, but I can't discuss right now because we have time constraints, looking at the effects of temperature and humidity on the Aedes eggs, and all of them found that Aedes aegypti eggs are more resistant to desiccation, and that at low humidities, Aedes aegypti results in a higher percentage hatch as compared to albopictus. Soda and Mogi, who previously looked at this too, they attributed this to egg volume, and they found that Aedes aegypti eggs were significantly larger than Aedes albopictus eggs. But I was curious, is there some sort of structure or mechanism that might also be at play here? The exochorion is linked with desiccation resistance in eggs, and Sir Christopher wrote a book in 1960, and he mentioned in this little paragraph about the chorionic egg pad coming out of the exochorion, and he mentioned that, or he suggested that it plays a role in desiccation resistance. This is just an image from his book, and this gelatinous, almost, you know, a see-through pad is what he was calling the chorionic egg pad. And he could only view it by allowing particles to float up next to it. And so with that in mind, I devised a study to verify if there was a correlation between the desiccation resistance and the size of the chorionic egg pad. And I wanted to determine if there were any differences between the two species with regard to their chorionic egg pad. And my working hypothesis was that eggs with a larger chorionic egg pad would be more desiccation resistant, and that the size of the chorionic egg pad in aegypti and Aedes albopictus would be different. For my study, I collected populations of Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus in McAllen, where they exist sympatrically, and in Brownsville, Texas, where they also exist sympatrically. And then I also had two populations in College Station, Texas, which were laboratory colonies at Texas A&M University. And these are just examples of places that I collected mosquitoes in McAllen and Brownsville, Texas. And this is just an image of the of the egg, and I found a stain. It's GIMSA blood stain that would actually stain this egg pad, so that I could view it under a microscope and then take measurements so I can measure it later. Okay. So eggs were collected 3 days after adults were blood fed. And the eggs were collected for 24 hours on a paper towel inside a little black jar. And then the paper towel went into a plastic container, and they're held at 100% relative humidity at 27 degrees Celsius for 2 days. And that allowed them to fully embryonate. And after 48 hours, the paper towels were still moist, which is really important in making sure the egg pad is still intact. Now, Aedes mosquito eggs are the shape of a prolate spheroid, and all the measurements I needed, all the calculations I wanted to make, I just needed two measurements for a prolate spheroid, the semi-major axis and the semi-minor axis, although I did a third measurement, which was the semi-minor axis, including the egg pad. So I had six populations, three of each species, and for each population, I measured 50 eggs. Okay, and these are, I think, the best ways to measure volume and surface area of a prolate spheroid. So I had, for the volume and surface area of just the egg, it was a function of A and B, which is the semi-major and semi-minor axis, and then the egg pad, egg width the pad, is a function of A and C. However, the egg pad only comes out of the ventral side of the egg, and so all my calculations where I'm looking at the egg pad, I did half a function of A and B and half a function of A and C. Okay. So the calculations I gathered was two equations for volume, two for surface area. This is one with the egg pad and one without. And then I looked at surface area to volume ratio, not including the egg pad and including the egg pad. And then I also calculated the egg pad size. The way I did that was just I took the surface area of the egg and the surface area of the egg pad and I subtracted the egg. So then I was left with just the surface area of the egg pad. And then I ran this through with a MANOVA with my seven variables, and I had the population and the species and their interaction as fixed variables. Okay, and here's some results. Aedes aegypti egg volume was significantly greater than Aedes albopictus, just like Soda and Mogi found, except for the laboratory population. And Aedes aegypti had a much greater increase in volume with the addition of the egg pad as compared to Aedes albopictus. The surface area of Aedes aegypti was greater than Aedes albopictus, again, except for the laboratory populations. And both increased in surface area with the addition of the egg pad fairly equally. And the egg pad was significantly larger for Aedes aegypti eggs than Aedes albopictus eggs. Now, the surface area for Aedes aegypti eggs was also greater than for Aedes albopictus eggs, even for the laboratory population. And the surface area to volume ratio decreased greatly with the addition of the egg pad, but Aedes aegypti was still greater than Aedes albopictus. And generally, having a higher surface area to volume ratio indicates less desiccation resistance. And since we already know that Aedes aegypti is more desiccation resistant than albopictus, that indicates to me that there's something, some other thing going on here. One possibility that I came up with is maybe there's an active water vapor absorption mechanism. There's been a few instances in which this has been described in insects and other arthropods. And the whole process for active water vapor absorption is not really consistent or fully understood, but every mechanism has a few essential elements, okay? The first of those elements would be there must be a surface that collects water, and it must be in contact with the cuticular surface of the insect or arthropod. While the chorionic egg pad is moisture rich, it's just this gelatinous pad, and it is in direct contact with the egg's cuticle. And there would be more moisture, a larger moisture source in a larger egg pad. So the eggs with a larger egg pad would have access to a larger water vapor source. Okay, the second essential element that all systems had is that there must be a mechanism that draws or moves the water from the water vapor source into the integument of the insect. Whether this exists or not, I have no idea. This is going to be a future study. But this is just an interesting possibility, this mechanism. In the event that that mechanism doesn't exist, the gelatinous egg pad on the side of the egg, it is protecting that side of the egg from the drying power of the air. And the larger that egg pad is, the longer it would protect that portion of the egg. And so this is why I think the Aedes aegypti eggs are more desiccation resistant, even though their surface area to volume ratio is greater than albopictus. With that, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Jimmy K. Olson, who got me started on the quest of Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus, and Dr. Jim Woolley, who let me invade his lab and use all of his equipment to take pictures and do measurements and stuff like that. Thank you. I have time for questions. Yes. Can you repeat that?
The lab population,
there were some variables that were not significant?
Yeah.
Is that your question? You mean that weren't, that didn't move along with the other populations?
Yeah.
Yes, there were, but I mean, the laboratory populations, they've been reared consistently for so long in this very strict environment that I didn't, yes, they were different, but I'm attributing it to that. Another question?
Yeah, another question. One of your, it looks like you're taking samples from, I guess, like Central Texas and then Southern Texas?
No, I was, the one in Central Texas that I have a population from, that was just our laboratory population. I was just pointing out Texas A&M University.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I was wondering if there were differences in like mean relative humidity and if, you know, the female mosquitoes could possibly change, you know, the width or the thickness of the egg pattern.
That's a really good question. I actually plan on looking at that. So, another question? That's a good question. She asked how long does the egg pad stay gelatinous. It depends on the environment that they're in. So as soon as they're laid, you know, they're in contact with moisture, with water, because they're laid at the surface area. And as long as there's water near them, I mean, I think they stay, I'm trying to remember, I never looked at this scientifically, but I think they stayed moist and prominent for about 4 or 5 days. But if you remove the water, like if you let the paper towel dry, it becomes this crispy film. So, any other questions? Okay, thank you.